Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hello there! Dearest, most darling Scoobies, welcome to another episode of Buffering the Vampire Slayer. This is a very special one. Today, I am sitting down with Jeff Pruitt, who was the stunt coordinator on Buffy the Vampire Slayer from 97 to 2000, and Sophia Crawford, who was Buffy's stunt double from seasons 1 to 4. Now, you're probably feeling a mix of emotions. You're like, oh my God, how is it possible? How can they just keep giving us so much wonderful content? And also, but I thought you were talking about Restless today. Well, we are going to actually talk about Restless for the next 2 weeks. We are putting up the first part of our season finale on April 24th and the second part on May 1st. That is because we had so much incredible content for the finale that we just had to split it into two episodes. So the first one, you'll get a couple of dreams and a couple of special interviews. The second one, you'll get the very same thing. We are so excited to share all of it with you. And we hope you are very excited to get into today's episode where I went all the way to Atlanta, Georgia to talk with Jeff and Sophia. You're going to learn a lot about them. You're going to learn a lot about all of the wonderful work that they did on this incredible television show. But first, let me tell you some news. Philadelphia, you know by now that we're coming to your city on September 13th. It is a Friday the 13th, and we are taping the season premiere of season 5 at World Cafe Live. You sold us out in one day. Holy forking shirt. Thank you so much. We are so excited. It's going to be really fun. So, Philly, brace yourselves. Also, we have some new merchandise. You think you know what I'm talking about because we added a new t-shirt a couple weeks ago with a reimagining of the logo design done by Christine Tuna, who did the original logo. It's a beautiful t-shirt. It is still there for you, and I've seen some of your pictures wearing it. It's rad. But we have 3 more new things. We have a new enamel pin designed by Kara Sykes. It is a bird's eye view of Willow and Tara doing what is referred to lovingly as the O spell. It's a glitter pin. It has glitter in it. It is fucking beautiful. So you might want to run on over there and check it out. We also have a new mug with our logo on it so you can sip your coffee or your blood, no judgment here, while, you know, letting people know that Buffering the Vampire Slayer is a show that you think is cool. Last but certainly not least, we have a dad hat. I am excited about this, but maybe nobody is more excited than Jenny Owen Youngs, who is wearing it on her head probably right this very moment. You can find all of that plus all of our other merch at bufferingthevampireslayer.com. Just click on shop. Speaking of going to bufferingthevampireslayer.com, you can click on Patreon while you're there and support us. And let me tell you what, this week, all of our patrons are getting a little tiny bonus. It's just a little 6-minute bonus from this very interview. There's a couple of really fun stories. There's a story about the only fight Jeff and Sarah ever got in on set. There's a story about the hungamunga scene, which I know you all remember. So a couple fun things that didn't make it into the main thing, but we thought would be fun for your ears. So again, that's available now for all of our patrons at every level of giving. All right, before we get into today's episode, you know there's another kind of news I got to bring to your ears. Here we go. Spooky news. Cool. Today's headline is titled on CNN.com, "Tiny Bees Found in Woman's Eye Feeding Off of Her Tears." What in the fuck? So this Taiwanese woman went to the doctor for a swollen eye, and the doctors were like, holy fucking shit, there are 4 bees in your eye. They are called sweat bees. They're very small, but don't let that not spook you out because my whole body is one giant chill at the moment thinking about this horror. Apparently these bees, this is really funny. Apparently these bees usually nest in one of 2 places, in fallen trees or near graves. So like, what? Do you think that Buffy ever had to wrestle with any of these sweat bees? This woman went to her relative's gravesite, and she said that the wind blew and something blew into her eye. It was really painful. After 3 hours of the pain, she went to the hospital where the doctors were like, yo, there's fucking bees in your eye. So, you know, like if you're going to a graveyard to visit your relatives or, you know, fight vampires, maybe wear some sunglasses. I'm just saying. This has been your spooky news. As always, thank you to Lauren Klein, our dutiful sound engineer. You can follow Lauren on Instagram should you want to know what a sound engineer does with her life at Lauren Taylor Klein. And that's all I'm going to say into your earballs at this point in time because, holy crap, let's go talk to the incredible Jeff and Sophia, who I didn't mention at the top. Not only did they work on the stunts on Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Power Rangers, there's some stories in there about that too, but they're also married to each other. They also run a coffee shop. I'm going to say this again at the end, but I interviewed them at their coffee shop that they own. It's in Peachtree Corners, which is just outside of Atlanta, or maybe considered part of Atlanta. I don't understand geography. It's called The Federal, and it's just their coffee shop. This is what they do. There's a time, I'm going to post on social media. You will see that when you walk into this coffee shop, not only can you get coffee, but there's a tiny little figurine of Buffy the Vamp. Like, it's just, I'm just saying, if you're near Atlanta, you should probably go check it out. Support them, of course, but also you'll have a blast. Okay, that is all I'm going to say. Let us please hear from these wonderful human beings who have just so many stories from their time on the set of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Okay, so I'm here with Jeff and Sophia. So excited that you both agreed to sit and talk with us. So we have so many listeners who are so excited. I know you've seen some of the questions in advance, but you all, I posted a picture to let everyone know that we were going to be talking, and people had endless questions. I don't even think we're going to cover all of them, but we're going to try to. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
You for coming
thank
down.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yes. So, okay, so take me back to the beginning. Sophia, maybe we can start with you. How did you get into doing this work? How did you become somebody who was Buffy stunt double for all of these seasons?
Well, there was a lot that happened before Buffy, you know, because I'm from England. I grew up in England. As a teenager, I threw on a backpack and jumped on a bus, and we drove from London to India, sleeping in tents. And I spent about 6 months traveling India with my sister. And at the time, I really, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I just wanted to explore the world. And I was meeting people that were coming from Asia. And they were always talking to us about, oh, you should go here, you should go there, you should go there. So I lived in Thailand for a bit, and my sister left and went to South America. But I felt compelled for some reason to stay in Thailand, not just because I loved it, but I just felt like I wanted to do something with my life. I wanted to have some type of career, but didn't know which direction to go into. So I was teaching English in Thailand, essentially just to make some money. And I fell into modeling work there through the hotel that I was working for. And then I started working as an extra in films that were American films that were shooting in Thailand. Hmm. And a lot of the camera equipment came from Hong Kong, from Salon Films, and the crew were all from Hong Kong. And, you know, when I was talking to them about wanting to get into the film industry, and they suggested to me that I should move to Hong Kong because I had a British passport and I could work there without worrying about a permit. And they said that there was a lot of action films there, and that there was a need for Westerners, and if I was interested in getting into acting, then I should go to Hong Kong. Oh. So that's exactly what I did. So I moved to Hong Kong, and I spent the next 5 years working there. And I was talking to, I realized that as an actress there, there was a need for let's say they needed Westerners to play the evil Westerners, the bad villains, you know, so they would have opponents to fight with. But in order to get these roles, then I needed to study martial arts. And I was always very athletic, tomboyish. I was always hanging out with the boys, and, you know, so I started training with the stuntmen over there. And I spent the next 5 years there learning as much as I could about the stunt industry, getting work and getting experience on set and learning, you know, all different aspects of Hong Kong style action. And then after about 5 years there and accumulating a decent resume, I felt that it was time for me to take the next step and try to see if I could get work in America. So I moved to Los Angeles. And when I arrived in Los Angeles, I guess it was really a timing thing. Power Rangers, WMAC Masters, mm-hmm. Kung Fu the Legend, there were opportunities for me that came up almost immediately. But none of those opportunities I would have been able to have taken had I have not spent the 5 years that I spent in Hong Kong prior, right, learning those skills and honing those skills.
Right.
And there were so many people that inspired me in Hong Kong, Yukari Oshima and Moon Lee and all the guys out there. I was absolutely in awe of the talent, the skill, the creativity, the stunt work. It was all very, it was so unique and I fell in love with it.
I had worked with her on a movie, and then I was doing Power Rangers, and I needed a Pink Ranger double, and she
Pink
showed
Ranger
up.
Pink Ranger was always my right. favorite Ranger.
Well, she showed up. We were going to audition some girls, and she showed up, and I thought, oh, I thought you just wanted to be an actress. And she said, no, I'm bored. I don't want to do fighting.
Exactly.
Because she came from Hong Kong, and every film was fighting. But here, it was at that time, women weren't fighting. Yeah. We didn't have action like Buffy at that time.
Yeah.
So she was like, all these, these parts are just boring. I want to fight.
I
said, well, if you want to fight.
They're not letting me punch anything.
Exactly. Right. I wasn't allowed to. I had to run and hold the hand of some guy and play his girlfriend.
So I said, no, come be with us. We do is fight all day long. So come on.
I was like,
be the Pink Ranger.
Yeah. So, okay, I want to hear about your background too, but first, since you're talking already about the fact that this is right when you got here and you're already talking like you know each other, how did you meet each other?
I used to watch her in Hong Kong films because I lived with Japanese stuntmen, right? And so we all would watch Hong Kong films all day long. And I used to watch her.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, she's the coolest. And then, but she also would watch Hollywood films, and she's saw this movie that I did where I was always coordinating the martial arts film, and then I would double the star, and then once in a while I would either play a bad guy or play like his buddy or something and get to do a little bit of fighting.
Yeah.
So this film called Mission of Justice she saw, and I got to play his buddy, and I actually got to step out and do a little bit of fighting, and she was like, who's that guy?
I was like, I don't care about the lead. Who is that guy? You know, when I was in Hong Kong, one of the things that I did was I would always go to the Hong Kong video stores and learn as much as I could about the Hong Kong film industry, watching a lot of Hong Kong films.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. And then prior to coming to America, I did the same thing with the B-movie American films, was start to really research and watch as many films as I could. And so that's how I came upon his film and several other people that I got to meet later on when I arrived in Los Angeles. I'd already seen their work.
Right.
You know. So.
What's funny about that too is that particular film is the thing that got me into Buffy, because after they had done the first 13 episodes, and Sophia was the fighting double on the first 13 episodes.
In the first season of Buffy.
In the first season of Buffy. And then the second season came around, and Sarah and Sophia and Sarah's lighting stand-in, Lisa, all three went to Joss and said, if you're getting a new stunt coordinator, you should talk to Jeff. He was talking to everybody in town, but he said, no, I don't want to do that. Because I was the Power Ranger guy, and what had happened was early on when they were talking about making Buffy a series, someone suggested, oh, it'll be like the Pink Ranger and it'll be like an after school thing.
Oh,
and it'll be
cute. So he was like, no,
it's not like that at all. and also in the Buffy movie, which he didn't like some of the things the way they did it.
Yeah.
One of the things was, you know, she comes out and just starts doing back handsprings for no reason, which is what we did on Power Rangers, a lot of gymnastics and very posy. So he thought, oh, I don't want people flying around on wires and flipping for no reason. That's not what I want. And so he would never see me. And also he found out we were dating and he said, I don't want people who are dating because then they'll start fighting on the set. And
right.
Finally, something came up. He had hired one guy. They started the first episode of second season. He got mad at the guy and fired him. Then they hired another guy, and he was ready to come in. And then Sarah said, well, why don't you just talk to Jeff, just to talk to him? Jeff said, okay, just to please you, I will talk to the guy. But that's it. Maybe if I have something in the future, but I'll be glad to meet him. And so I came in. I didn't have anything prepared, so I just showed him this. And he was like, that's what I want Buffy to do. Can Sophia do that? And I said, sure. And then we started talking. And then within a few minutes, he told him, call the other guy and tell him, don't come in. I've got the guy. It was the first time I had a show, which I loved all the shows that I worked on, but it's just that they weren't something that I would watch for my own entertainment, you know? And this was the first time I had something that I would watch for myself. Even if I weren't working on it, I would watch that show because it was entertaining to me.
Yeah,
you know,
oh, that's
so
fun.
Well written, you know.
Yeah, I agree. As you might imagine, I would agree.
And me also, you know, I really loved, you know, reading the scripts as they came in, and it wasn't just about sifting through the dialogue to look for what stunts I had. No, I wanted to know what the story was, how the characters were evolving. I was a fan myself.
I mean, to hear you say, right, like I had all these parts where I was just holding my boyfriend's hand and I wanted something more. I mean, if there isn't something that defines the Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the series more, that's...
Absolutely. That's I'd been craving for it. Because in Hong Kong, the women had pivotal roles. They were fierce fighters and they had very good roles, you know, strong roles.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was a little disappointed when I came over to America at that time in the very early 90s and the women weren't being offered these roles. I was like, there's something not quite right about this.
Right.
You know, why are you so behind the times?
Yeah.
Women and people in general, you know, it's like, this is just such an old-fashioned...
Well, even during Power Rangers, I was talking to different producers about doing something like Buffy with a female character, and they would all say, yeah, but she can be the sidekick of the hero, but people want to see the guy. It's all about the guy. Nobody wants to see a girl fight.
Nobody
like,
wants to see
you know,
a girl
maybe
fight.
A cute little cat.
And how wrong they were.
How wrong they were, yeah. It all started, I think, with Buffy and Xena. I think those two shows really catapulted the whole thing. And then after that, I mean, you could see it. All of the television shows that came after Buffy and Xena had a lot of female fighters, and it just became, oh, it's normal now.
Right. Tell us about your history too. Like, how did you? We've heard how Sophia sort of found your way across the globe and into the work that you do. But how did you get started?
Well, I grew up. I watched when I was a little kid. I watched Bruce Lee and Green Hornet, right when that came out. And then I was racing motorcycles and cars. And I just grew up that way with martial arts and vehicles. And as time went on, I think. Films started happening, since I'm from Georgia, films started happening in Georgia. And after high school, I started dabbling in films. I would work as a PA and I would work as in any way I could to get on the set. And then eventually I worked as a camera operator. And then finally I got to know enough stunt people that they started letting me step in and do some things. And then gradually I just started doing stunts. And when I made my way out to LA, I did stunts for a while, and then one of the second ADs on the second unit of a Chuck Norris film that I worked on here in Atlanta back in the early 80s met me in Atlanta, and he said, hey, I've been calling your house in Georgia looking for you. And I said, well, I'm here in LA. And he said, oh, come down to the set. So I came to the set, and he was doing a martial arts film, and we started working together. Then after that, he introduced me to the producers, and I just kept going one film after another with them. And then I got calls to do more, and then TV shows, and then it just kept going from there.
The next question I had, we kind of touched on already. Mm-hmm. You knew each other for a long time. You were dating before you even hit the set of Buffy. You were already dating.
Well, what happened was I was dating someone, and when she came over here
on Power Rangers, not
right,
Buffy.
On Power Rangers, but what happened was. I would break up with my girlfriend, and then we would date again. Then we would break up. And
we know that one. Yeah.
I had a crush on him. Right.
Well,
I wouldn't touch him because he had a girlfriend. So I was like, no.
And I wouldn't make a move on her because I was directing Second Unit and she was the Pink Ranger. And I thought, I shouldn't be like hitting on the Pink Ranger, you know.
Right.
So I'm like, so I'm trying to be Mr. Professional all the time, and I didn't know it. But
I thought
she
didn't like me.
Oh no! It was terrible. At lunch, I would sit down with the DP and my first AD, and they would go, "Dude, you know she likes you. Why don't you ask her out?" And I was going, "Oh man, I can't. What if she says no? I can't." It was so stupid.
Right. And I was like, "I'm not going to make a move.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that." No, so we were friends for at least a year, right?
Yeah. And she didn't know this, but she, when the Pink Ranger helmet, she would be standing there talking to the other Power Rangers, and I would be over there with the DP working out this scene. I thought she wasn't paying attention to me, but really what she did was she would turn the Pink Ranger helmet to face the people, and she would turn her head inside so she could watch everything I was doing.
I would watch him through the helmet, and he couldn't see that I was watching him.
I had no idea.
I was stalking you, dude.
Incredible.
And I was the one trying to look at her because I thought, oh, good, she's not looking right now.
And
I was,
wow, and you were looking at each other.
Yeah, I was checking her out. Oh, man, it was terrible.
And so now you've been together
25 years. We just had our 25th anniversary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Happy belated anniversary. That's incredible. Okay, so let's talk a little bit. I'm still reeling at the like Pink Power Ranger helmet piece of the story. As a person who is obviously, you know, very aware of the Power Rangers when the Power Rangers were initially on.
Yeah.
Okay. So this question, so a lot of the questions, as I mentioned at the top of the interview, came from our listeners because they are so excited. So I'm going to tell you who the questions came from.
Lovely. Okay.
So Katie from Twitter asked where the line is when it comes to fight choreography, like for you, Sophia, where that line is between Sarah and you, and is it different depending on the actor? Some actors do more before somebody like you would come in for them. So where is that line and how does that work?
Well, on Buffy, we usually had the guys do a little bit more than the girls.
Mm-hmm.
But with Sarah, my number one job was always to keep her safe. I mean, they said, Pruitt, do not let her get a scratch. And I made sure,
right.
I told the stunt guys, don't even grab her hard. I mean, we were so careful because, you know, she was brilliant actress, but she wasn't really a physical type person.
Right.
You know, she wasn't rough and tumble type. So we would shoot all of the fights with Sophia, and then I would pick like two or three spots to put Sarah in. We would just do a quick little. As a matter of fact, you had mentioned something about heels, wearing heels and stuff.
Yes. One of the questions is about her always being fighting
Sophia
in heels.
Sophia and all of the girls, all of the stunt women can tell you horror stories about, you know, people have broken their ankles and stuff trying to wear these spiked heels and stuff. But we talked with Sarah and we talked with the wardrobe and Joss and everybody, and we made a deal with them to whenever in the scene, if they would write the wardrobe so that anytime she's wearing something like that, most of the time when it comes to time to fight a bunch of vampires, we wore what we called Buffy boots. So it was always the same boots that she wore that was good for Sophia to fight in.
The wardrobe actually on Buffy was very accommodating towards me.
As compared to other shows.
They were lovely, actually. Really great.
Sometimes in features, it's very difficult because they don't understand. They're just thinking about what it looks like.
Yeah.
So we were fighting on slippery grass in the graveyard, and, you know, you couldn't wear heels. You'd just get your heels stuck in the grass. It would be impossible. I'd break my nose.
Yeah, Buffy wardrobe, they understood the importance of the fight scenes with the show, and so they accommodated.
But it's not been like that on other shows. I have worked on other shows. I worked on one show where I was doubling Tori Spelling, and I had to wear a high-heeled boot because there was no match to it. I was the only foot that would fit into it, and it was a simple 8-foot jump from standing to concrete, but I broke the bones in my feet. Wardrobe turned their backs on me. They wouldn't watch me jump. And it's such a simple stunt, but it's so dangerous because you know, you're landing on your toes on concrete and something's going to break. And I've been with other stunt performers who have broken the bones in their feet as well while we were jumping together in heels. So I've broken the bones in my feet. I've sprained my ankle from trying to work in heels. And it's just, you know, it's something that we do. And you, wardrobe usually you will work quite closely with us with getting some type of a shoe that looks similar but has a lower heel, perhaps a wedge that has a little bit more, you know, it's a little bit more sturdy. But that's not, you get what you get, you know, and you just got to work with what you get. And if it's really not working, then maybe you might need to change the choreography slightly, you know, to accommodate for that heel. But generally speaking, no, we get what we get and we work, you know, we work it out.
Right. I want to go back to just real quick because I know people are wondering about this. You said Buffy boots.
Buffy boots.
We talk a lot about these, but I think Buffy boots, the ones that look
the
like the brown
heel,
leather square.
Exactly.
We are like, she is always in those boots.
Right. That's Buffy boots. That's why.
Yeah. And, we cracked it, guys.
And you'll see, there are, and actually, Sarah, a lot of times, is not even wearing the Buffy boots. When we would do her shots, we would do Sophia doing the fight, but when we would do Sarah, it would be from the waist up. So she would be wearing her tennis shoes, during the actual shooting.
Right.
But
And Sarah did, you know, did do some training. I actually worked quite hard with Sarah in the first season to do some training. But as the show evolved, you know, she also got an extremely busy schedule and was constantly being pulled away, which took her away from time to train with me. And then when she would get onto the set, you know, so it was just, it was a very, very fast moving show.
What does that look like when you say, you know, you would train with her, like you would teach her certain moves that would allow her more.
I would teach her moves that would, like, so from, for instance, so we'd work on certain kicking techniques that weren't too difficult, some certain blocking techniques and techniques where she could, you know, flow from her dialogue, a lot of like strong poses, strong stances, these things that could tie into and be edited into me.
And we see, I feel like as a viewer, especially the way that we watch the show now, doing a podcast about it, you know, we're watching it so much more closely, that it does seem that as the seasons progress, Sarah is getting more and more experienced in you see her like more strongly staking.
Absolutely.
Like
Because it was brand new. Think about it. She came from the soap world and then suddenly here's this actress who was a great actress, but all of a sudden they're like, okay, now you have to do this. And she had just, you know, when she was auditioning for the part, she had mentioned, oh yeah, when I was a kid, I went to martial arts class, but they took that to mean, oh, you're a martial arts expert. But no, you know, she was just an actress who, you know, it's like a kid who went to an aerobics class. That doesn't mean you're like...
it takes time to train.
Yeah, you know, it's stunt fighting is a thing unto itself. Even if I went to the kickboxing gym and got a guy who's knock you out in the ring and brought him onto the set and said, okay, now we're going to do a fight scene, he would look stiff and boring because you have to learn all these expressive over the things that are the exact opposite of what you would do in the ring. You have to do as a stunt person and an actor fighting.
Right.
So it's a whole lot to learn. So, but as we went along, she more and more got into understanding it. And she knew what she needed to do and what she didn't need to do. And she trusted me completely as far as that. I trusted her with, I would show her where the acting bits were and whatever it was she thought how Buffy should do it, that was her. And as far as the action and what I needed her to do, whatever that was, she'd leave that to me. And that's how we did.
You know, any scene that she had to do, I'd be right there with the pads to make sure she was, you know, always padded to the max.
Right.
Anything that she had to do to make sure she didn't.
She was like the quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, protected at all
times.
Well,
also, she was because that's what the, and even she said to me, not just the producers saying, you know, to protect Sarah, but Sarah said, you know, no one touches me. Only I could pick her up. Only I could catch her on the or to catch her by hand or by the pad or whatever.
Yeah.
It was like we had a thing where no one else could do it. It was only me, and that way there's no like, you don't have to worry, who is this guy? You know, is he going to do this right or anything?
Right, one she slip,
just,
one...
Yeah, mm-hmm. And she just...
And she felt comfortable.
Yeah, she felt comfortable with me doing that.
Probably so. The most important part of a position like...
Right, because she has to just, you know, focus on her acting. It may be something where she's getting killed and she has to flop and she has to know...
She gets in the moment with her acting and sometimes we'll forget her surroundings, you know, as actors do.
Right,
you know?
Of course.
Oh, I remember one time I was holding the pad for her and we did like two or three takes where she gets killed. This was when the master was breaking her neck.
Yes.
And she falls out of frame. So I'd already done it with Sophia in the wide shot. So I slipped in there with Sarah to hold the pad. And we did like two or three takes. It was great. And then on the fourth take, I don't know what it was, but she was acting and she just, and then she went the opposite direction and just flopped on the concrete. And I said, but I'm over here, you know. I'm where I was before. And she was like, oh, yeah. She said, I thought the pad felt harder.
So she was in the
actors she was in
get
the moment,
in the moment, you know.
You know,
they get in the moment. So, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah.
So, all right, I have a question about James Marsters, which is related to this, like, where the line is. Because Katie continued with her question and said, is it true that James Marsters did most of his own stunts? You would probably, you probably both know, you were both there. But.
Right. Well, no, because when it came to what we call stunts, which was like the crashing thing.
Yes.
No, we wouldn't let any actor do that. The only time we let an actor do that was Nick one time. But
how very Xander of him.
Yeah, it was when he thought he was a soldier.
Uh-huh.
He was fine. We let him. I said, okay, go ahead.
Wow.
But because we knew, I don't know, it was kind of weird, but we just knew, okay, if Nick gets bruised up, then we've got the weekend off and he doesn't have to do anything next week. So you'll be all right. But, you know, but certain, like James was having to fight all the time.
Yeah.
But we did a lot more of the fighting portion of it what James had created with the character, the way he acted, then he would try to teach that to Steve Tartaglia, the stunt double, so that Steve would kind of act like him. And so we had this thing where, we would shoot more of James actually fighting. But when it comes to like throwing down the stairs or he's getting, we couldn't risk it, you know,
right.
We just couldn't. And also another thing we did is we never, after somewhere in the second season, we decided not to allow, and this was Joss talking to me about this. He said, let's just make a rule, and this is the rule. And the rule is we'll show an actor's face. We're never going to have two actors punching each other in the face. Only if it's an actor getting punched in the face, it's a stunt person punching the actor. Because the two actors would get a little bit carried away. They weren't used to having distance, and they would always clock each other. So we decided, okay, just stunt double will hit. So like when you see the sword fight, with Sarah and David are never actually sword fighting each other. It's always David sword fighting Sophia, or there's a little bit over the shoulder with David's stunt double and Sarah, you know, in a close up. Because if a lead actor gets punched in the face, it changes everything. You have to reschedule. You have to figure out how can I shoot this guy with his eye closed.
Oh my
gosh. You know.
So they would do things
together,
but certain things you would have to make sure.
Especially the guys, they're gung ho to do it, but you just don't want to risk it.
James was always gung ho, and don't get us wrong, James was extremely energetic, and he was agile, absolutely. And there were things he could have done more.
Like he could, I feel like we just saw an episode where it looked like he could do that. There's probably a name for this that you both know, but where you're like on your back and you jump.
Oh, he keeps up. That's what I mean.
A kip up.
So James was very athletic.
That was one of the first things.
So was David.
One of the first things that I found out.
You know?
I said, "Oh, you can kip up? Okay, we're going to kip up."
Certain things like that we would certainly use.
Yeah.
You know.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hello, my name is Alison Larkin, and I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of the Jane Austen podcast. This podcast brings Jane Austen's stories to the 21st century, along with commentary from me and conversations with fascinating people who all share a love of Jane Austen. And of course, we had to start with none other than Pride and Prejudice. So join me as we embark on a journey through some of the most wonderful stories I know. The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions here about fighting styles. And Jeff, one is specifically for you in terms of, and this is Michael from Facebook, wanted to know how much input did Joss and the writing team have with regard to the fighting style on the show? Did they weigh in on the different characters and like how they would behave in battle? Or was it more like they would come to you and say, like, these characters are going to fight, make them do it, make it look cool?
It's a little bit of both, because with the writers, it was just they would write the character, what the attitude and what's type of character it is and what happens. But as far as choreography, usually like Joss would just say, you know, it's up to you, because he trusted me to go out and make it. And sometimes he would just write on the script, just she Pruitts the SOBs, and I would go out and make the, but that was with the vampires. When it's a certain character that's supposed to be a certain way, the writers will put in what that thing, like the thing with the spike coming out of Adam's wrist, things like that. It's very specific what he's supposed to be.
Right.
And then, but the choreography, however they fight is up to me. However, I would try to meet with Joss before each episode. We would have our regular production meetings, our location scouts, all of this stuff. And we would talk a little bit, but he would be talking to like a million different people. And then I would try to get alone time where it was just the two of us, and I would say, okay, what's this character? And then we would, and then I want to do this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And like specifically, you know, I would ask for certain things. Like when we went to hell, I asked him to build a platform because I knew I could make a fight real quick and have the guys fly out of frame.
But also there was often quite a lot sometimes in certain scripts, there was dialogue that was in with fights. You know, so
right,
it was an emotional,
there
were certain emotions that would also play into the fight, which is always important because it's not just about fight, it's obviously about the story and telling the story of the characters and moving that story along as well while you're fighting, so.
Yeah. Sophia, I want to turn to you for a second and hear if you have any stories about like your favorite, you know, you fought so many people on the show.
Mm.
Layla from Instagram asked if you had like a favorite big bad to fight or a favorite, you know, it doesn't, I guess, have to even be a big bad, although I guess Buffy was usually fighting the big bads.
I enjoyed fighting so many of the characters, but I suppose I would have to say my favorite would have been Faith.
Ours too.
It has to be, because we had emotional battles.
Yeah.
You know, and also oftentimes, you know, sometimes the fight sequences I did were short. It was a matter of one or two hits. Sometimes it was a group of people, you know, vamps, several vamps. But with Faith, it was, usually one-on-one, and they were pivotal moments in the script. Do you know what I mean? So there was a story behind the fight that we were doing, and so we would have a little bit more time. They would allow Jeff a little bit more time, so we'd have a bit more time to choreograph. We'd have a set that we would be able to work with. We would work our choreography through those sets, mm-hmm. instead of just being planted, let's say, on the patch of grass in the graveyard. So our fights would like in the apartment that went out to the rooftop,
yes.
that went off the rooftop, that they traveled somewhere, which reminded me more about the Hong Kong fights and the style of fights that I was doing in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot, it was a bit more creative and like I said, we got a little bit more flow. And I loved Eliza and I would have to say Faith was probably one of my favorites.
Loved. I mean, season three for us, especially Jenny and I are both queer women, and the tension between Faith and Buffy is palpable.
It is.
And their fights are, their fights, I think, are my favorite fights in the whole series. So actually, we can talk maybe a little bit about the Buffy Faith fights in a more expansive way.
The first Buffy Faith fight almost didn't happen because, there was a new director that day. And everybody was saying, there's no time to do a fight, there's no time to do a fight. But I always used to, I would meet with Joss before and talk about what we want. Well, this was one of the times I didn't get to meet with him.
Oh, wow.
And so I showed up on the set, and the director and the DP and everybody was going, no, he's going to do like three hits, or Faith hits her, Buffy hits Faith, and then they knock each other down, and that's it. We don't have time for that. And so I said, yeah, but I just talked to Joss, and I think this is Joss really wants this. Let me show you. And so they were like, if Joss said, and I said, well, yeah, Joss said. So that's how I got that fight in. So that first fight, and then once they saw it, and then all of a sudden the director was like, oh, you're the action director, you're great. And then he was like, yeah, I really wanted to extend that fight. So I was like, yes, he did. And it was great. So then from then on, it was Buffy and Faith fighting. And it was a lot of fun.
Well, they had plans as well for their characters, obviously. But yeah, there was a certain push as well to have them do more as far as action.
Well,
We had
Kindra before.
Right.
That was the first two Slayers fighting.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. But then Joss told me, he said, I've got this new girl coming in, and it's going to be another female Slayer coming in to fight with Buffy, and it's going to be, girl versus girl and everything. So, but it's important to explain to her about her character, what her character is, that what it is that makes her different from Buffy. And so he told me about her anger deep inside that she had, and she had some bad things that happened with men in the past, and she had anger toward men, all of this stuff. And then he said, so I want you to go pick this girl up at her manager's house and bring her over to your house and teach her about this. And I said, okay. So I went and I picked up Eliza, brought her back to my place, and then we just practiced. It wasn't so much trying to teach her specific techniques, just certain techniques, because I told her, don't worry, stunt doubles will do all this high kicking and stuff, but it's more the in-between, the way you act. And so what I did was I gave her, back then it was a VHS tape of Bruce Lee in The Chinese Connection, Fist of Fury. I said, look at his anger when he's going crazy. I said, this is really over-the-top anger, right? He said, it feels hard for actors to do this. Like, I know for Sarah, when I used to talk to her about it, she felt she wanted to be a little more calm as Buffy, when, a little, nonchalant.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but for Faith, this... what you see Bruce Lee doing, he's anger, crazy anger. This is what Joss is talking about. When we get on, at the end of this fight scene, we're going to get on top of this vampire. And at the first fight scene that Buffy and Faith do together, they're fighting vampires. Said, you start pounding him, and Buffy is going to be looking at you like, wow, let up, And she's just beating because she's thinking about all these things that happened to her. So Eliza took the tape home, and then when we came time to do that scene, which is another, if Buffy fans want a little bit of inside info, that vampire that she's pounding on in her very first fight scene with Buffy and Faith fighting vampires together, that guy that she's pounding at the end is Dave Leach, who he was one of the first stunt doubles for Spike that I had, but he's the director of John Wick and Atomic Blonde. Wow. And what's the one he did recently?
Deadpool.
Yeah, Deadpool 2.
Wow.
And now he's going to, I hope he's going to be doing Enter the Dragon. So that,
and that,
that director,
was him.
But yes, that was also what I loved about Fighting Faith, her energy. The energy, you know, because I felt that energy in Hong Kong, like the guys didn't hold back, and, you know, and so she was a strong woman, you know, and she had that energy, and I loved that mm-hmm. kind of thing, really, you know, it just brought up my level as well, you know, I felt like, oh, I've got to bring my game up to meet her energy,
right.
And so we both brought our energy up, and that, I think, made it, you know.
Do you think that part of that is because, like you said, in Hong Kong, like if you were fighting the men, they wouldn't hold back.
No.
But here, the men that you would fight would typically hold back.
Yeah, and some.
And Eliza or woman.
And sometimes other women would hold back slightly too, but that not now.
Yeah.
Things have changed massively. I mean, I would like, you know, you look at certain guys on the street, you wouldn't think twice that they could fight, but, well, I would... No
right.
way. You just never know
right,
now.
Right.
You know, everybody's fighting, so.
Gosh.
But back then,
you're really
it was
the
very
walking.
Rare.
You're like the actual Buffy out there. Like, people don't realize they're going to mess with you who they're messing with. So many people asked about like favorites and most challenging or like most dangerous. You know, people want to know sort of like what your favorite stunts were to do, and also if you have any stories or memories of the hardest stunts to do or stunts that went wrong during the filming of Buffy.
I think most people know about the stunt that went wrong for me.
I don't.
The night he.
Well, I was sorry that it made the special effects guy coordinator mad at me, but I didn't mean for him to get mad at me. But they were doing a Buffy book, and they asked me when the writer had heard that I had asked Sophia to marry me on the set. And what happened was, One night, the special effects guys had rigged this net that was supposed to just lift her up about head height,
mm-hmm.
and he was piling all of these sandbags on the thing. And I said, "Wow, that's like 300 pounds of sandbags. He's going to drop down, and that's going to ratchet Sophia up." I said, "That's way too much." I said, "Look, I could hold the rope with one hand and sit down, and that will raise her up, and." Trust me, this is, you don't need that much for him. And
yeah.
He said, okay, all right. So he took the weights off. But then when I walked away, he put all the weights back on. He
and
said,
it
all
rained. Right, no, it rained
yeah,
as well.
And, but that,
oh, so it got even heavier.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, it was one of those things where I looked very young back then. I was very, really a kid to them. And he was like, I'm not going to listen to this stunt coordinator kid. I know better than him.
Yeah.
So he did it. And as soon as he released it, it shot her way past the camera crane. She came out of the net.
Oh my gosh.
She would have been killed, but she got her her foot.
My elbow. No, yeah, it was my elbow.
Yeah, and she was able to cling on to it so that when she came down, it snapped her neck back and she sprained her neck.
Horrible whiplash.
Yeah. So she came this close to getting killed. And I just thought, oh my God. I said, you know, I didn't get mad. I didn't shout or anything. I said, what did you do? And the guy just sheepishly said, well, maybe the sandbags got wet. And yeah, maybe we shouldn't have used so many. And I said, okay. But that night, I just took her up and I said, are you okay? And she said, yeah. And I said, okay, then you're going to have to marry me.
Just, oh my gosh. Wait, was that's what motivated the proposal?
Yes.
Because I just blurted it out, you know.
Wow.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I needed a moment. For me, you know, I would, you know, the gag was relatively simple and I was just meant to step on the net and be caught in it and I'd go up about 10 feet. But what happened was visually, I stepped into the net and all of a sudden my head was thrust back. It was very violent. And then there was a crane about, 30 feet,
about 30
feet high above the,
that.
And so I went way past the camera, went past the treetop.
Oh my God.
I was flailing my arms and there was nothing but air around me. I could see, there was a moment where I almost paused at the top and I could see the entire graveyard and all the crew beneath me. And I went, wait a minute, I'm not, where's the net?
Yeah, because she was only supposed to go
here. Yeah. Where's the net?
Way up there.
And so I started flailing my arms, and the net was next to me. And fortunately, the squares in the net, they were large, you know, and I managed to hook my elbow in one of the pieces of it. But had it have been a smaller net, I wouldn't have been able to get my elbow through it.
And so you would have just fallen straight down.
I would have just come straight out.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So that sounds like one of the more extreme things that happened, but for you in that situation, is there something that you do to like get back into it? I mean, that's
no,
terrifying.
I just asked for 5 minutes. I was shaking all over, and I needed to do the shot again because my hat had come off. I was wearing a woolly cap, and they said, well, we need to redo that shot. You know, and I said, well, just, I said, I'm fine. I'll do it. I'm shaking a bit right now. I need to calm down and let me just go to my trailer while you guys reset the gag, and then just give me a moment. So when I went to the trailer, he came into the trailer and proposed to me. And then I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel now. I feel, I'm like, what do I, I was like, ah.
Actually, it's like, I made a YouTube channel, and I just to throw a bunch of behind the scenes of Buffy stuff on there for the fans, because I had all this behind the scenes video.
Yeah.
And one of the things on the second season video that I made is that stunt with her, and you can see her afterwards and everything.
We'll put that link in the information to the YouTube channel so people can see it.
Yeah. That's one thing that helps me to remember so many things that happened during those episodes, because I have a lot of it behind the scenes and it jogs my memory.
Yeah,
a lot of people always comment about when they see those behind the scenes tapes, they realize how much work goes into every segment of the show, you know, everything that we did.
Yes.
Because when you just watch the show, it kind of flows by and you think, oh, you know,
and we would, we often worked almost 7 days a week, because when we were shooting one episode, we were gearing up, we were at the same time prepping for the next episode.
Mm.
So sometimes on the weekend, we would be in there trying to rehearse on the sets when they were empty, so we could get a little bit of a rehearsal time on the sets, you know.
There was many times where I would come in just to rig something by myself.
Right.
And because there was no time during the week, we were so busy, I would be shooting one scene and then running out to do some pickup shots with another director for a previous show. Meanwhile, the director of the upcoming show would be pulling me to come over here and look
locations.
At another set, because we've got to plan this. So for me, it was like every week was like three episodes going on. And it was kind of like that for Sarah, too, because she would be not only have to change, we were always changing the script as we went along. New pages would come and said, okay, we dropped that scene that we were planning. Forget about that. We're doing this now, which for me, to have to re-choreograph. For the crew, it was like, oh God, I don't have to light that. You know, I'm going to go, this is easier to light. But for us, I have to do a whole brand new thing.
Right.
And for Sarah and people that are carrying the show, they have to learn new dialogue, change the dialogue.
Plus all of the PR that they have to do, all of the, and that was a lot, you know.
Right. At the time and even past the series.
Always had interviews and places that she needed to go to and events that she needed to attend.
Yeah.
I mean, she worked really, really, really hard.
Yeah.
I love the Buffy crew so much.
Yeah, and we hear that every person we talk to, whether it's an actor from the show or, you know, whoever works on the show really has like that they've come away with. And I wonder, like, maybe as a more general question, is sort of what it feels like to be such an integral part of something that has touched and continues to touch the lives of so many people.
Well, you're literally living with these people.
Well, also,
we're together all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the time when things take off, when they first take off on a show, because I've been lucky enough to be on different shows when they took off, and you don't realize it when you're working on the crew because you're just constantly working.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, like, with Power Rangers, we had a live show thing, and so I had to go with some of the actors and some of the stunt people down to do a live thing, and the 405 was backed up, and there was like parents were trying to bring their kids in, and LA was shut down because of people. We were like, what, for us?
Right.
I mean, we're just doing our little show out in the park. What? Really?
Right.
I didn't
Same
even realize people
Buffy.
Were watching us, right?
When we were shooting at the school, when we first...
At Torrance. Went out.
At Torrance.
Because it, Buffy, we had our own little backlot, our own little thing. It was actually that director I was telling you about, who was the second AD on a second unit,
yeah,
who became a director. Well, his dad actually built this place that became the Buffy set. And that was our little, our own private studio. There were no other shows going on. It was just us. And so we were in our own little world. And I remember the first time we thought something might come of the show, because whenever I said to the stunt guys, I would go, what are you working on? I'm saying, oh, it's this Buffy the Vampire. And they go, what, that movie? And they said, no, they're doing another movie. I said, no, it's a TV show. And they were like, oh my God, they made a TV show out of that? And it was like, nobody believed in it.
Yeah.
You know? And then I remember one day, I think it was Allison who came to the set and she went, guys, did you see it? And we were like, what? And she said, there was a billboard and it had our faces on it.
Yeah.
It's like we're on a real TV show.
Yeah.
Wow. It's like a real TV show.
And then people, gradually people would start to gather at Torrance to meet Sarah, try to meet Sarah.
Wow. During the filmings.
We had gone across the street talking about the show getting big a couple of times to like a convenience store. Right. And I remember David I had met way back. He tried to get on Power Rangers, you know. He was a young actor starting out,
yeah.
and I tried to help him. And then he remembered when I came to Buffy, he said, hey, man, you tried to help me start in acting. And I said, well, how's it going with this? And so we went across and we got some stuff in a convenience store, nothing, you know, so fine. David, we just walked out, like, to the sidewalk, and all of a sudden, there were people driving by, and they went, it's Angel. And I was like, wow, dude, they know you. It was weird.
Yeah. It was weird
because all of a sudden it started getting to be where people would, like before they wouldn't even look at you, and now they would turn around and just like start pointing at you.
Wow.
As if you don't see it, you know? They're just like you're an object.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I was like, wow. So that's what it's like to suddenly get famous. It's weird.
And such a different time too, because you're not as... Now I think we have like more communication with fandoms and things.
It's so different.
Right,
yeah.
Whereas then it's sort of like zero to 100.
It was 0 to 100.
Yeah, and also there was
We didn't have phones that took pictures.
No.
We had flip phones and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, but people just, I remember people would think that the actors were like their characters, mm-hmm. you know, and that was hilarious to me, especially Nick. Nick has such a, he has a great sense of humor,
yeah.
but he has like very colorful language sometimes with his jokes.
And Seth.
But I remember Nick making cracking some jokes around us and some fans one time when we were out. And then when he walked away, the fans were like, why is Xander acting like that? He doesn't talk that way. Why does he talk that way? It was like, what? He's cursing. I was like, well,
those
are words.
Person.
People write the words. He's just reading the words that the writers write. I mean, that's not him. This is him.
Yeah.
Believe me,
exactly.
He talks like this all the time.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, it's funny.
And Boreanaz, too.
Oh, yeah.
They used to crack us up. Seth, Nick, and David.
Yeah.
Together.
As a trio.
Man.
Yeah,
hilarious.
So we had
good on a night when we were like waiting for a long setup and we're all tired. Great.
So they'd keep you going.
Yeah.
Boreanaz could not do this today, but one night we were doing this thing where, you know, I dropped the Angel double from the ceiling and he crashes on the floor and he's naked, right? But he's wearing the little, they give you this thing that's like a little
sock
kind of thing. You put your stuff in and it's just a little string holding it up. It's flesh colored, the wardrobe people, the makeup people touch up. And so he hits the ground and he's doing his thing. And then it was like, okay, let's bring in David. And then David comes walking in, nothing on, man. And he's just standing there, he's going, let's get this going. And like, the whole crew was like, dude.
It was hilarious. But that's how David was, you know? And
no
inhibition.
He didn't care, man.
He didn't care.
Oh, the stories that you all have.
Yeah, but it was great memories.
It was
hilarious, you know.
But I mean, think now
but we were like a family.
To,
it was,
well, it was to all of us, we just
cracked us up. Just cracked us up, man. Yeah.
So before we go, I could just sit here and talk to both of you for the next 5 days, but I won't do that. I know you're both very good at working long hours, but I'm not going to make you work long hours here. But somebody asked a question that I thought was really fun, which is the simplest, if there is, what's the simplest stunt move that we as non-trained professionals could pull off for fun? Danielle from Instagram asked that question. And so I wonder if there are, I mean, probably things that look simple to us are not, and maybe things that look super complicated to us are simpler. So is there something that we could do? So there's something you could teach me how to do?
I used to come up with all of these elaborate methods of staking people that were like, you know, but then I would show Joss and talk about it, and then he would go, no, you know, that's not going to happen. And then the reason was because Sarah, by the time we would get to it, Sarah would be so tired, and we would have to go get her out of the trailer or something and say, okay, now I'm going to need you to do a back bend.
Sure.
So what we did was we would make the staking simple. So when you see it's almost the same thing. It's either this way or it's this way. And that's the simplest thing. And he said, just keep it simple. Everybody will be happy. Make your elaborate stuff with Sophia, then we'll do this shot with Sarah, but don't try to push her to do something ridiculous because we'll be here all night,
right,
the rest of the night.
Right.
And I said, okay. So the simplest thing is staking.
Staking a vampire.
Just take the pointy end. We're going to go like that. And then go, ooh.
Aim for the heart.
Then freeze. Vampire goes out of frame. Then unfreeze. Ooh, okay. Not ready. Do your dialogue. All right.
Listen, thank you both so much. You've spent such a wonderful amount of time with us telling us. I mean, I can tell that there are stories upon stories upon stories that you have from all of your years working on the show. Something that so many people wrote in, and Jenny and I, of course, feel the same, is to thank you. They said, please thank them for everything that they did for the show. And we thank you, too, because you really...
Thank you. Thank you for... You know, still talking to us after all these years.
It's a lot of fun.
We're kind of surprised, you know, that after all these years that people
still
talk about the show. It's great.
Still.
Well, so many years had gone by when I threw that behind-the-scenes footage on YouTube, and I thought, well, I wonder if anybody will actually see this. And the next thing I know, I was getting all these emails going, oh, my God, where did you get that?
The fandom is really one of the most powerful fandoms out there.
Truly. It kind of reminds me of Star Trek.
Yes.
I worked on the Star Trek shows, and the same kind of feel where they know all about each character and the interrelationships between the characters. Same thing with Buffy. The fans, they know everything.
It's amazing. And so thank you. Thank you.
Yes. We've told people to come and visit you here at the coffee shop at the Federal. Yes. Is there anything else you want to tell people before we wrap today?
No, just come on down to the Federal. We've got live. We're in Peachtree Corners in Atlanta, and we have live music. It's great atmosphere. We have the best coffee in town, and just come support us and enjoy a good cup.
Yes, it's so fun.
And thank you. Thank you for watching Buffy.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Thank you both again.
Okay.
Can you even handle how wonderful the two of these human beings are? They were so gracious to sit down with me and talk to me, to have me, to host me in their coffee shop. It was so wonderful. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you are even more excited now to round the bend to the end of season 4 with us. Next week, April 24th, you will get the first part of our 2-part episode for Restless. And May 1st, you will get the second part. There's some fun interviews, including an interview with David Wells, who plays the Cheese Man. So buckle up. It's going to be a really fun couple of weeks. And thank you again, Sophia and Jeff. If you want to follow us, you can do so on Twitter and on Instagram at BufferingCast. You can email us at bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com. You can visit Sophia and Jeff at the Federal Coffee Shop in Peachtree Corners. And you can also see incredible behind-the-scenes videos from Jeff, who has his own YouTube channel. Just Google Jeff Pruitt YouTube. It's the first one that comes up. The link is also in the episode description today. You're all beautiful. I love your faces. So does Jenny. Oh, my God. See you next week.
Hey, Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.